Here we are with episode 83 of the Florida Trail Runners Podcast, and this time we are back at the Long Haul 100. Now, typically, I feel like, you know, we always talk to the runners, you know, the runner stories, but this time we've got a whole new perspective. On the chat, we've got Ali Matthews, Andrew Barrett, and Jessica Calise. They were some of your aid station heroes out at aid station number 2 with the Thompsons. And huge shout out to Julie and Pops. You know, it was so nice, so awesome to see them out there again. They are absolutely legends when it comes to volunteering at races. And for the long haul, you know, it's got the new location at Coal Creek State Park. Registration's open. And let me tell you, the registration is filling fast. Amy made a post on Facebook and the race already has over 100 runners in the first 32 hours. I think it's at like 105, 107 or something like that right now. It's going to be one heck of a race in 2024. I know for me, I'm signed up. Harvey Lewis is coming back. Your 2023 champion, Kalo, he's coming back. Yanni with the biggest smile on the course, he's coming back. You know, Jeff Iosa, he's returning. Eddie Souza, Louis Coco, Amy Colombo, Laura Walker, you know, Loveland Finley, the Miles with Marty podcast, Marty Gardner, he's coming out. You got Jamie Saunders, Molly McGill, Doreen Hoffman, who ended her 2023 with a stage race across Antarctica. Literally so many names, like so many names from Orlando to Miami to Tampa to Gainesville, Georgia, Virginia, Ohio, Minnesota, North Carolina, South Carolina, California. I think you've got Maryland, New York, Kentucky, and even British Columbia. So we've got some Canadians returning. It's going to be one heck of a year, and it's just too bad that it's a full calendar year away. But hey, you know what? Back to this year, let's kick it off with some stories from the aid station.
I made it from the wilds of Phoenix, Arizona.
Ooh. Hey.
Hey, Joe. Hey, Allie.
Hey there.
What's up? What's up?
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm camping right now. I've just retreated to the tent to record while everyone is out there doing a drinking game of some sort. So,
where are you camping?
Outside of Phoenix, Arizona.
Nice.
Yes. It's very fun. Very, very fun.
Yeah, sounds pretty intense.
Ba-dum-tsh.
It's got to be cold, Allie.
During the day, absolutely gorgeous. It's sunny. Let's see. It is 63 and sunny right now. But yeah, at night, it is pretty darn cold. Luckily, one of my friends had an extra like sub-zero sleeping bag that I'm borrowing. So as long as I am inside that sleeping bag, I am so toasty. It's amazing. But then, God forbid, I have to like get up to use a restroom or something. Absolutely miserable. Absolutely miserable. But it is, yeah, it's a good time.
More fun than what we're doing. We're sitting on the couch eating rotisserie chicken from the grocery store.
I was
going to
say.
Because we didn't cook anything.
But it's February 1st. So how is life post Whole 30?
Oh, I'm still eating Whole 30.
So there is no life post Whole 30.
Not yet.
You don't really get into the cravings. You're just kind of used to eating this way. And like, I just wanted rotisserie chicken.
Let me just go to town on some rotisserie chicken. Why not?
Living large.
Well, that is very exciting. I think I've eaten maybe a whole baguette and hummus as most of my meals since we've been out here.
Yeah.
It's just delicious and that's what is easy.
I would definitely, the hardest part of cooking at that aid station during Whole 30 when you really can't eat, you know,
yeah,
foods, was that soft Wonder Bread that we
oh,
made
yeah.
those egg and cheeses with, that grilled cheese, the peanut butter
oh,
jelly.
Yeah.
And I wanted to eat that. I think that might be like the first bit. I think I'm just going to get a loaf of Wonder Bread.
Which is so funny because like when do you ever like just crave Wonder Bread in your life? Like, that's not really something that's like, let me get that Wonder Bread, but it got in your head and now it will never go away.
I think we went through like 8 extra large loaves of Wonder Bread in the at that age.
Insane. Just insane.
That was tough.
Okay, what are we, Joe, lead us on this journey.
The journey is pretty chill.
All right, I love it.
But I'm just excited that the long haul registration's open and ready.
And it looks like the registrations are rolling in. I don't know if you saw the Andy Kroom Facebook post, but first day open, and it seems like people are excited and are signing up already.
He texted me 87 about an hour ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was checking at work, and I think in the morning it was like 52 people. And then at 1:40 was already at 71, and then I got home from work and I was like over 80. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the word is getting out as if it wasn't already, but you know, it's very exciting. New course, more people, more aid station.
A better course.
That's what they tell me anyway.
Yes, I love Coal Creek. Is so nice.
Yeah, I've been out there a couple times with my dad and Amy, just kind of hiking around, hanging out, and it's a nice course, nice in lots of nature, lots of, you know, wildlife, good stuff.
Yeah, and like you got Mac Jackson signed up again, Kayla's coming back, Harvey Lewis is coming back.
It's going to be a race to the finish for sure. No more just Kalo out in front of everybody with Casey Rayburn, I think, was the one who was in second and almost caught him at the end. But I would love to see Kalo and Harvey Lewis fight it out.
Me too. That would be very awesome to watch.
Oh, yeah. And obviously, I guess before we start talking about some aid station stories and all of that, I guess we should start off with some introduction, you know?
Oh, yeah, a little intro.
Yeah, you know, what are those backgrounds, you know, either running or volunteering?
I guess I will start out. I am Allie Matthews of the Kroom family dynasty, as my father would call it. I think I didn't realize until this year how many people didn't know that I am the daughter of Andy Matthews. Some people know him as Andy Kroom, the race director of Long Haul, along with my stepmother, Amy. But that is how I got here. I came by it. I had no choice. Came by it, honestly, through blood. But I think I started coming out to races when my dad started doing ultras when I was maybe in, like, I don't know, elementary school. And I was pretty young when he first started. And some people who've been around the Florida trail ultra running community for a while will remember that when I was, I don't know, 8 years old, maybe, so 20 years ago, and my dad first started talking about doing ultras and 100 milers, we watched a documentary on Western State in which whoever it was that was sitting at the aid station was just talking about, no, I want to quit. I want to quit. And the story goes, I turned to him and I said, you're not going to quit, Daddy, right? And he was like, well, I don't know. It's really hard. I'm going to try not to. And I was like, no, don't quit. Don't quit. And I ended up making a bracelet for him that said, don't quit. And for a long time, you know, throughout my elementary school years, maybe a little bit into middle school, I was making don't quit bracelets for a lot of the Florida trail and ultra runners that my dad knew. So I know, I'm trying to remember who it was, but someone out on the course at Long Haul this year turned to me and was like, I had one of your don't quit bracelets. That's kind of how I ended up getting involved at all. And then once my dad and Amy started putting on races, when I was still living in Tampa, I would come out occasionally and honestly help a little bit, but mostly just hang out and chat and drink beer. And then the year, correct me if I'm wrong, if any of you know, but it was either 2018 or 2019 that my dad decided to run Long Haul as well as race directing. Whichever year that was, he had called me up. I was already a flight attendant at the time, and said, I really need you this year because I'm going to be running, so Amy needs help. And I kind of became the person who, anytime Amy needed anything, because one person, you know, directing that race was not, it's a huge undertaking. I was running in the car to get ice and water. I was running stuff out to aid stations. I was at aid stations helping runners. I was kind of doing a little bit of everything. And I caught the bug. Maybe not the actual ultra running bug. I have never run a race longer than a 10K. But the environment, the atmosphere, and just the people. I just loved it. And seeing my dad and Amy do something that obviously they love and the community they love. I have been coming back, and especially to long haul ever since. And now that we've found our, you know, our little niche in that aid station, I know it won't be aid station 2 anymore, but wherever we end up with the lights and the music and cheering runners on, I know my dad talked about it when he was on. The two of us were just crying, setting each other off about everyone's stories and seeing them finish. And I've rambled on for quite a while. I'm sorry about that, but that is my story to how we got where we are today.
I'll go second. Andy Barrett, I've been running for close to 20 years now. I think I've been doing ultra since about 2006. I actually met Andy Matthews very early on. I'd met this guy, Chris Wedge, at a race up in Georgia, the Sweetwater 50K, and he told me about this place called Croom. And I went to run with him and his wife, and this loudmouth guy ran with us the whole time. I couldn't stand him. and then the next time I met him, he was the honorary starter at another race I was doing, and he was there as the Florida Ultra Runner of the Year, and did this. Recently, sub 24 Western States, and I was like, oh, well, maybe the guy's not such a loudmouth. and I've been running ultras back and forth with Andy ever since. Allie, I had one of those don't quit bracelets. I wore it at every race for probably 6 or 7 years running.
Awesome.
So I'm closing in on 200 ultras over the years.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. That is insane.
Had a lot of fun, had a chance to run in a lot of places and enjoy a lot of courses. I showed up at Long Haul 1 year to work the aid station in the morning and then pace Andy in the evening. And that worked out a little differently than I thought it would. The aid station was overstaffed. We were at the central hub. And all I did was drink screwdrivers in the morning. And they really didn't need any help. And then I paced Andy drunk most of the night. It just kind of became a thing to come to Long Haul and not really run it. I have run it twice, but I worked the unmanned aid station with Susan Anger and Christian Stewart and Sean Connolly for about three years running. And then last year when the Thompsons couldn't make it, Allie, you and I and Jessica decided we would go out there and fill in for the Thompsons. And we had such a great time last year that we wanted to come back and do it this year. And it's fun to give back at races, but there's something about this race and the repetition of seeing people and that building a rapport with the runners over the course of 32 hours. It's as good or better than a lot of the races I run.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that getting to know the runners, I know at first I had little notes written down. Like I remember Kelvin had the American flag. So next to his number, I had flag. And then by like the third loop, I would see the flag coming from a mile away. And I'm like, go Kelvin. Mm-hmm. And little things like that for all the different runners. There is something that's so special about that repetition, them coming in and just getting to know, you know, at least enough to say hi. And then for some people enough that I was crying as they finished the race. So.
Yeah, I'm Jessica Calise. I have not been in the running community for as long. I started trail running about 4 years ago, started doing half marathons, and met Andy. And, you know, he's like, you should try further. You should try further. So I got up to do 33 miles at Long Haul, another one of Amy and Andy's long play at Andy and Amy's, one of their races. That was fun, but, you know, back down, and I like a little bit shorter of a race, but have been going to Long Haul for the past 3 years. I paced Andy the first year, a few laps, and last year, because of the Thompsons, they needed someone to run their aid station because they weren't available. And it was a blast. We did it, the three of us, last year, and just had so much fun getting to know the runners, seeing their highs and lows. And this year, one of the most special things that I found is the night before you're organizing the aid stations, and we met a someone's crew, and Josh, 150, Josh, and we found out his story and why he was running, and we rooted for him. Even before the race, it was really special when you get to know the runners and what got them into this, or what they're running for, and you really want to see them succeed. And learning that about runners definitely is the most special part, certainly for me.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, kind of having to set up. So I guess, what is volunteering at an aid station? There's probably a lot of things from the setup and other things to do. So I guess, if you could take me through from arriving to the spot and then having it up and running, because I know you guys have a heck of a setup.
Sure.
I think a big part of it is we all have our roles. So coming into this the first year, I had helped out at aid stations before. I had certainly never set one up. So that's where I would turn to the expertise of Andy Barrett, who basically, I think, Jess, if you agree, just that first year directed us, do this, do this, do this. Yep. And then we fell into place by, as time went on.
Certainly.
So Andy, if you want to let us know. Or
he gave us a lay of the land for sure. And we did have roles. I think it also probably came from our background. Allie works for American Airlines. She is the most hospitable, friendly person you'll ever meet. She'll know your name. It was natural. She sort of played this role of calling out the runners. I have a background in hospitality management, worked in a lot of hospitality, worked in a lot of kitchens. And so it was pretty easy for me to play kitchen and figure that out. Also, I'm a mother, so you're basically a diner cook, a line cook at all times with kids. And Andy basically did anything hard. I feel like that was...
I enjoyed climbing the trees and hanging the lights.
Yep, climbing, doing a little Tarzan action. The Jeep definitely got some good use, driving up to the trees, and Andy was climbing on top to hang the lights. But also, by the second year, I kind of knew a little bit more how to talk to runners as runners, not just as I'm very happy to be the hype woman, to just call out your name, be your friend, but listening to Andy talk to the runners about their running. One thing he said to us is always just say, "You're looking great. You're looking amazing," because sometimes hearing it is the thing that you need to keep going, even if it's not true. Or, you're out there, you're doing the thing. And so little things like that. And I don't know, by the first year, there was definitely a little bit of a learning curve for me. And by the second year, it just felt like we really fell into those roles that we had carved out for ourselves. And we were working like a well-oiled machine, and the Thompsons were back. So that is a huge amount of energy and just love that was coming from them that really made the aid station just even exponentially better than we had gotten it going the year before.
Yeah, people's faces just light up when they see CB and Julie standing there.
Yeah, I know, I sure did.
Yeah.
So Joe, as a runner these past couple of years, how was our aid station for you? We're looking for some five-star Yelp reviews right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, it looked great during the day. I'm just bummed I didn't hit it at the night.
next year.
Well, like anything Andy does, everything's extra. And so first year, it was lit up. You could see it a half mile away. And after the holidays were over and the Christmas lights go on sale, he was at Home Depot getting another 1,500 lights to put up. So many decorators barely worked to light everything up because he had so many.
I want a second generator next year.
I was going to say, we're going to need another one because that one was, we definitely had some flickering lights that were maybe not at their full power.
Yeah. But Joe, you were talking about what is involved in the setup. And so it's a weird dynamic. You know, that Jess and Allie were talking about falling into our roles and how we talk to the runners and how you handle the runners and what we were doing. But at the same time, you're running logistics on keeping a soup kitchen running for 32 hours.
Yeah.
Do we have everything? So you're prepping your tables. You're trying to figure out, you have your drinks over here. And we're going to have the cups out over here. And we'll have the open Coke and ginger ale bottles here. And we'll have the kitchen set up over here. And we'll have food laid out here. Put the trash bags here. And you're thinking about how the runners will come in and flow through the water, the food, the trash, and out. And you put the chairs over here. So if they really need them, they have them. But they're not too welcome. We don't want runners to sit down. And where are we going to be? And then where is our backup food going to be? And then it all...
And all of the different types of food, you can't put it out all at once. So you're planning, okay, first thing in the morning, egg and cheese are good. We're going to do that. We want to make sure they get through two or three laps before we switch it up. And then you kind of switch things up. Then we're going to go with cheese quesadillas. That's going to be our new hot food. And then after that, we're going to go with ramen. After that, we did mashed potatoes that were...
I can't believe people loved them that
much. Instant russet mashed potatoes. That we serve
with or without bacon,
exactly.
And then if you wanted to, by the end, because people just needed to get something down and they didn't want to have to eat potatoes, we're just like dumping hot veggie broth in there and it's like, just slurp it back. Now it's loaded potato soup. We've moved on to a new meal.
That was very creative. Allie created that little soup at the end. And it was, I mean, you honestly have to, and Allie, what about the vegans, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, we got vegan cheese. So I remember the year that I helped out Amy when my father was actually physically running. At the time, I either was vegan or was still like eating primarily vegan. And I was very insistent at that time, we have to get vegan cheese because we're having burgers, we're having quesadillas. The vegans need something. And I think ever since then, especially, and also it's just become so much more of a thing. It's been having Harvey Lewis out the past couple of years. He's vegan. There's so many vegans in the running community. We had that vegan cheese and Amy specifically told us, okay, you have X amount of slices of vegan cheese. You are the only aid station that's going to have this vegan cheese. So use it, but kind of use it sparingly. Because when we run out, that's it. We started kind of getting to know different people's preferences because everyone, when they come in, you know, okay, in our minds, it can be you grab your water, you grab your soda, you grab your food, you throw out your trash, you go. But that isn't necessarily how every runner is going to approach the aid station. It's their race. We're just there to help. So we started talking and we're trying to offer things up. Oh, Mac, you want a cheese quesadilla? He's like, oh no, sorry, I'm actually vegan. And I think he was the first person that I was like, oh my God, we have vegan cheese. I was like, next time you come around, like, if you think you're going to want a vegan quesadilla, let me know. I'll set a timer. Okay, you're going through the loops at this point at like an hour and 45 minutes. I'll set a timer to have one ready for you. And Amy, after that first one, Amy texted us and was like, Mac wants another vegan quesadilla. So we're like, okay, let's get it ready.
if anybody thinks she's kidding, Allie had her phone going off every 20, 30 minutes. And she'd look over at Jess and go, we need a vegan cheese for Mac. We need a for Bill, you know.
Yep. We had Mac. Prepped. We had Andy Farina had a vegan quesadilla. Bobby Joe had vegan. And there are more people too, but that is the kind of thing that I'm like, okay, if Mac Jackson, he's already apparently signed up for next year. If I am out at one of those aid stations, I will know. So Mac, that's if you're listening, there's motivation to stay vegan because otherwise, you're going to have to eat the vegan quesadilla either way because I'm going to have it ready for you.
Allie, I have the printout sheets that you did the check marks on, coffee stains and all from the race. Sitting here, and you've got notes all over them on who the vegans are, who the Canadians are.
I had Jason curly hair.
This person wants Mountain Dew. Oh, yeah, you had one guy named Snail Shorts.
Oh, John Truelove. John Truelove is Mountain Dew. He was so fast.
Shorts, but he was very fast. Oh,
Chris Stengel. He is fast.
Two first names. Dave Bryan, two first names. who I'm still sad I didn't get to see him on his last loop. That was my nap time, unfortunately.
Jen, not Jennifer.
Jen, not Jennifer, and Nico, not Nicholas. And Andy's favorite to say is that I say good friend, I don't know if he would consider us friends, but Yanni, who was number 9, who just has the biggest smile every time you see him on the course. What a nice guy. And so fast, once again.
Always smiling. And he was a year two. You know, we recognized
him from the first year. And
Andy,
did he sign up for next year?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yes. And Andy's quip every time he came through was, "Oh, there's a 10 disguised as a 9. And that just tickled me every time, too.
we had fun with him.
We did. We did. So many good people. It just really goes back to that. So many good people. Good enough people that even when we were, like, freezing cold and tired, I know I didn't want to take a nap. I knew I had to eventually, but I wanted to watch every single one of those people come through on every single loop.
I did too. You don't want to take a nap. I took a nap and I unfortunately woke up kind of cranky and kind of tired. I napped too long. I was too cold. I got back into the kitchen thinking, okay, I'm going to do this. And I realized very quickly I wasn't going to be good. You know, you have to. You cannot be cranky. It's in the middle of the night. They have been running for, at that point, almost 24 hours.
Yeah.
Your attitude has to be like someone, you know, a cast member at Disney World. And I wasn't a cast member at Disney World. I needed sleep. So I, you know, checked out and said, okay, I'll be back in a few hours. Went, got real sleep. And check back in. But, you know, you are not in a place where you can complain or not.
No.
Attitude when this group has been literally running for 24 hours.
And this is where we have to shout out Walter, who came to relieve Jess. Walter, I don't know if he knew anyone at the race. I didn't know him, but I don't know anyone. So, well, that doesn't matter. But he was curious as to whether he wanted to try out ultra running. And the way that he decided to, I guess, do his research was to come and volunteer. So he just got thrown in a Jeep, taken out, dropped at aid station 2 in the middle of nowhere. And he really like pulled it out. What a nice dude. And we really are thankful that he helped us out.
When he showed up, he looked like a deer in the headlights. And I heard he was a newbie. And I was like, this guy's going to be no help at all. He was a pro, but within like 2 or 3 hours, he was money.
Oh, yeah. He was running that kitchen because at that point, Jess had gone to sleep. And then I was running it for a while. Then I went to sleep for a couple hours. And he was fitting into the, you know, the well-oiled machine that was Aid Station 2. So that, once again, the nicest, best people in the world that come out to these races. And at least that's been my experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and one of the big things that you're not just, you know, handing out food. You're also the emotional support for a lot of people. You're a lifeline.
100%. Yeah. I mean, you really have to, for food too, you have to ask those questions. We all had questions. When you're in the kitchen, I'm asking, what do you want, salty or sweet? Because sometimes it's not hard. They'll just look at the food they don't want to eat. But if I could kind of identify what are they cooking? Then I could start calling out things that might sound good to them. If we get to one that works, or asking how they're feeling, monitoring what they look like, seeing, okay, I think you need coffee. You certainly have to be able to do a little bit of a pulse check.
You go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, it's not just about making sure you have the right food or the right supplies for them. It's just being the emotional support and telling them they're doing great and they're going to make it and they can make this goal. Or, well, you may be, you're not going to break 20 hours, but you can break 24 hours. Or maybe you won't break 24 hours, but you're going to make the time cutoff. I mentioned at the outset that I'd run almost 200 ultras. Well, that unfortunately includes, I think, 24 DNFs and maybe another 20 or 30 races where I teetered on the edge of a DNF. Because I wasn't sure I was going to make it. And a lot of times, I don't want to say it comes down to somebody in the aid station. Ultimately, it's my decision whether I keep going or not. my fault if I quit, or my decision, at least if I quit. But mm-hmm. an encouraging word from a complete somebody you know or a complete stranger says, dude, you got this. You can keep going. You look great. There's no reason you can't go out there and walk for 10 minutes and start running again. And we'll see you again in a couple of hours. And I've had that done for me enough times that, you know, that was one of the things we talked about last year. And Jess and Allie got great at, too. They could have blood streaming down their face and a leg hanging off hanging on by a thread. They'll lie to them and tell them they look great.
Well, or I always would go and they're like, really? I said, oh my goodness, you were just here. You're fast. And they're like, no, I wasn't. That was really slow. But I mean, you know, it's always good to be like, well, I'll see you soon. You know, and
right.
feel like it's not going to be long till you see me again. And I'm going to have ramen next time. You know, and.
Well, and it was so cold, as we all know, and we had a fire going out at the aid station, and there were a couple of people. Bernadette took a 10-minute nap, and she truly was like, set a timer for 10 minutes and wake me up. I remember Cassidy, Jess, you talked to her for a while, Cassidy, whose birthday it was, running the long haul, and she was never going to stop, but she was feeling really down, and I think like just sitting at the fire, having that conversation... it seemed to really make a huge difference.
Yeah, she was one of the people that wavered, and you guys helped bring back. We weren't the ones that bring her back, but remember Mo?
Yes, Mo Hogan, through. Of course.
She got. I remember I was pacing Chris Bucarelli for that lap and a half, and Mo apparently got back to the main aid station and kind of broke down, and I think she was there for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
and you know. I was sure she was out, and they got her back out on the course, and she came through our aid station, and you guys picked her right back up. You look great, Mo. Great to see you again. We'll see you in a couple hours.
Yeah, she was one of the people I was lucky enough to make it to the finish, to see her finish, and that she talked about it, which, by the way, Joe, I have to say, and I know that Andy and Jess agree, that episode you did with the newbies who did their first 100 at Long Haul was awesome. I really, really enjoyed it. And I had a little tear hearing about, you know, their side of the stories. But that you played a little audio of it that like, let's go, Mo, let's go, Mo. As she was coming through the finish, I was there for that. And I was one of those people chanting. And it was this like, I had never met her before that day. But in that moment, it just felt like my best friend was crossing the finish line and seeing. You know, it's all well and good to see the people who breeze through the race, but seeing people who struggled and who really had some low moments and then still come out on the other end and finish, there's just something so special and so amazing about that. And being even a small part of it, that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're always seeing people at their highs and even still the lowest of their lows. So I guess coming into race morning, what are those things that you see people from the start that, you know, it might play a role later in the race?
For me, the thing was getting to know people as quickly as you could so that you could help them the most you could. Like, I know Laura, I don't know Laura's last name off the top of my head, but she came around one of the earlier laps and needed Vaseline. And I actually didn't think we had any. Then she ran off, went to the back to look, found it, grabbed it, handed it to Andy and was like, go run and bring that to Laura right now. And after that, every lap when she came around, I was like, do you need another Vaseline? Like little things like that. That could have been a huge problem for her. I mean, I know that obviously she, I'm sure, had some at the hub at her own tent. But if she's having chafing problems, if there's something we can do to help by having a little Vaseline ready, that's something that we can do as the aid station. And little things like that, I think getting to know people, you can help them the best you can.
That's something that you and Jess did really well. So the first year we did this last year, we talked about, you know, like Disney would put people's names on their bib so that when you ran by, everybody would call your name. So you run in the Disney Marathon and, you know, you don't go 100 yards without somebody yelling out, go Allie, go Allie. Well, they see Allie right on your name tag. And so what we did last year was we would look as the numbers coming in and call out their names just to give them the positive reinforcement of somebody at the aid station knew their name. And, you know, the first couple of laps, you're looking at the number, you're looking at your chart, Oh, that's Randy. And we'll call out, you know, you'll call out Randy. By the fifth or sixth loop, we know Randy's last name. We know his wife's name. We know how many ultras he's
right.
Nobody's struggling with. We know that his kids are out front brewing it. We know that his son is now pacing him. You know all this stuff about him, and you more and more of a rapport. So by the time they come around the 10th time and they're finishing their lap, they're all giving you're giving hugs to everybody that comes through.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Joe, if you make it through next year, you'll get a hug on your last lap too.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry.
Actually, Ali, you made me think of something else there too. Last year, the Bucks were in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They had a Sunday afternoon game, and Andy and Amy have Bucks season tickets. So last year, they gave the tickets to the three of us, and we actually left around 1 or 2 in the morning. Somebody else came in and took over the aid station for us. And that was maybe the most disappointing thing of 2022 was all these runners that we'd spent 16, 18 hours getting to know and helping. We didn't get to see the end for all but Harvey and a couple of others.
Mm-hmm.
This year we got to see it through. And so the 10th lap for every runner was just fantastic to have plus people come by and know they're going in to finish 100 miler. And for probably close to half of them, their first 100 miler.
Mm-hmm. My dad was trying to be nice. And he came in when we dropped Jess back off to finish out at the aid station and help with the cleanup. He grabbed me and said, oh, come back to the start finish with me. And part of it, I think he wanted me to get to experience seeing a couple people finish, which I really appreciated because, you know, it's like the full circle moment. But he was trying to be nice and he wanted me to be able to go home. He was like, you know, you've done your part. You've slept like 1 hour in the past 36. Go home. And I refused because at that point I'm here. I'm going to see, you know, there was only maybe 10, 15 runners left that were still out on the course. I wasn't leaving before every single person went through that finish line, because when you've put that much like heart and soul and dedication into watching these runners throughout the past 30, 32 hours, I wasn't going to leave. I wasn't going to just say, okay, I'm ready to go to bed now, because they were still out there and I wanted to be there for them. You really do become attached.
Definitely. The runners that take 30 hours, I mean, they're gutting it out to get it. And those, it is, you really want to see finish. You want to see that. It is, they have put so much time into it. It is really special.
You brought them very well.
I did bring
the last one in. What was his name?
Michael
Ortiz. Yep.
Yeah. The last, I was, of course, well rested. I had, I think, 4 hours of sleep, which felt like 10. And I got back and everything was, we were pretty cleaned up. We had two more runners we were waiting on. Michael comes in. He's looking, I mean, he looked pretty solid throughout the race every lap. It was his last lap.
Were not there, he was asleep on his feet. So he had the second wind of all second winds, because he was tired at one point.
So he looked okay. I said, oh, what's your pace, you know? And he's like, you know, what his pace was, I could definitely do. I was like, oh, you want me to pace you for the last five? He said, I'd love that. And so I got to end up getting to know him and his story, which is he's done 100 hundreds in 100 weeks between 2019 and 2020.
Crazy.
Insane. And he did it through COVID, and he got to share all these things he had to do in Brooklyn while they were closed, and really inspiring, and what got him into running, his brother. And it was amazing to share that with him and be able to, you know, piece the last person across the finish.
You did.
Yep. That was awesome.
Yeah. So one of the things you guys keep talking about is kind of a magical moment. You know, you've seen people for hours, one day or even into that second day. You know, what's it like for that final lap for the runner? You know, is it hard to see them for the last time, or is it just exciting?
Well, a couple of people did shots of fireball on their last lap. I don't know if everyone knew that was available, but there was a few people who they knew we had the fireball. It was in the medical box, which is hilarious to me. And I had mentioned it jokingly. Oh, yeah, I want a shot of fireball. And they were like, last lap, we're having fireball. And so these two were on hole 30. So they did not get to join in the fireball shots. But I joined a couple people in their final lap fireball shots. And obviously, that's not every runner. But it's that kind of like celebratory atmosphere that is so cool.
there's a real sense of satisfaction to it too, you know, and it's really weird how you, at least for me, my brain wraps around it. For these runners, when they get to us that last time, they've run 95 miles. And for some of them, that's 15 hours. And for some of them, that's been 30 hours of running and walking. And they've still got 5 miles to go, but they've done 95 miles, which very few humans have done. It becomes such a labor of love to make sure that everybody's getting around, that as they come through that last time, it's like, yeah, I did that. I helped them get here. We have run a step, but it's like, yeah, we made that happen.
They always have a smile on their face. That last, or mostly, the last 5 miles, they know they've made it. We are the last thing that they do or they see before they head into that finish. And it is, and most of them have their family pacing them. One gentleman who looked totally consistent every time he came in, the same time, and all he always wanted, he was a salt guy every time. What would you like something salty? And the last time he had both of his sons with him, and it was just so special to see and to be part of this moment, him and his family.
Yeah. I remember singing happy birthday to Cassidy on the last lap. And I had jokingly said that to her early on. I said, okay, last lap, we're singing happy birthday. And sure enough, last lap came through and we all sang, and just the look on her face, just the pure joy of you've accomplished this thing. You, even if you, through the toughest moments when you didn't think you could, you did it. You got through it. And being on the other side of that, there is a sense of satisfaction of I helped them get there. Obviously, it's a lot easier to stand around and hand out some food and drinks than to run 100 miles. But there is this just amazing sense of satisfaction and pride in these people who you feel are your best friends, even though you may have only met them, however many hours prior.
Yeah, but there is a goal aspect to it too. I mean, we talked about it right at the beginning of the race. We had a couple of big goals, and the number one goal of the race was we need 100 runners to finish.
Yep.
Andy and Amy have always been limited with the number of starters they can have there, but to remain a Western States qualifier, we need to consistently have 100 finishers. So come hell or high water, we need 100 people to stay upright and cross that finish line. So every person that comes through on that 10th lap, that's another tick box to, okay, we're headed towards success.
Yep.
Before I forget, the number two goal was to make sure Tommy Grinovich got his 1,000 mile buckle. Tommy had
If we had to prop him up and Weekends at Bernie him across the finish line, it was going to happen.
And I guess, before we kind of do a wrap up closing question, for people who are thinking about volunteering for an aid station, what's that top advice that you would give them?
My top advice would be that if you're looking for an aid station or you just want to volunteer in general, check out another A1 Ultras event, the Long Play, on March 4th. There's going to be plenty of volunteering spots open. This is actually my contractual duty as a member of the A1 Ultras family. 33 and a third single loop. Jessica, who's on this call, has run it. It is the race that my father proposed to Amy, my stepmom, at. Lots of good memories, and you could be a part of that. So go volunteer at the Long Play on March 4th.
Oh, what would I say? I mean, I said it a little bit earlier, but I think as a volunteer, you also need to know your limits, how much sleep you need and what you can do, and you need to be a little bit of self-aware of when you need a break. Just because you are their support, emotional, and you have to be there, and you have to be there with a smile, and you have to be really supportive, and you need to know when you need to tap out. I certainly learned that this year, not leaving at one, what my limit is before I need to kind of put the oxygen mask on myself.
Yeah, I definitely would not recommend anybody sign up for a 32-hour shift like we did.
Right.
We're all family, so we're obligated. But 8 or 10 hours is where you can keep your energy level up. And like Jess just said, be that positive force for the runners as they're coming through. You're 100% there to make them happy, to get them fed, to keep them healthy, and to keep their spirits up and getting them on to the next leg of the race. Even if you're nasty, We didn't have any nasty runners this year. We had one pacer who almost threw a hissy fit, and Allie talked her down, or at least got me away from her before I talked her down.
I used my conflict resolution skills, my de-escalation that we have to use on the airplane. If I use my airplane voice on you, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But I wanted pineapple juice.
Too bad, case, so sad, buddy.
In this case, we weren't serving cheese quesadillas, and the accusation made that maybe we were saving those only for special runners. Right. Ali handled that one well. But you know, it goes back to the old customer service thing. The customer's always right. In this case, the runner's always right, and the runner always looks great. So just tell them they look good and get them to get some food and fluid in them and send them on their way. Don't let them sit with you for too long.
And I would say, if you're a first-time volunteer and you're not a runner, so for me, I am as my father once again would call it, a hobby jogger.
Yep.
So I'll go out and run a couple miles, but I am certainly not what you would call a runner. But that doesn't mean you can't volunteer, you can't have a great time, but lean on those people who have more knowledge, more experience. That first year that the three of us did the aid station, if it hadn't been for Andy Barrett telling me, here are the most important things from a runner's perspective, we wouldn't have had as much of a successful aid station as we did. So if you've never done this before, if you're just out there trying something new, you just want to, you know, see some friends or do something productive with your weekend, that's totally fine. Just if somebody says, just pour them water in their bottle and smile, do that. And then you'll pick up more as time goes on.
I'm just thinking from the kitchen and my Italian grandmother who just wanted you to eat everything as soon as you're in the house. I'd say any Italian grandmothers out there that love to feed in bulk and make and feed people, this is probably a really good place for you.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you like to hoot and holler and yell. When I was out at Colt 45, so Craig, he ran the 100 miler and crushed it.
Craig Betts.
We could see runners coming, and just like when, you know, the whole Thompson gang was together, I would, hey! Whoa, I was screaming. You could honestly probably hear my voice a mile away because my voice was so hoarse the next day. Man, that's what an aid station's all about, just hyping everybody up.
Oh, yeah. We had the playlist going, the lights. It was definitely a hype zone.
By the time you got into us, you'd gone 3 miles and through the Hall of Pines and quiet, and you knew you were going right back the other way, 3 more miles back the other way. We didn't just want to feed you and get your energy level up.
Definitely a diverse.
And, you know, I guess we can kind of, you know, start wrapping it up with, you know, what are those final takeaways from volunteering at an aid station, you know, that they really have an impact on you personally, you know, because obviously no race can go on without volunteers.
My takeaway is that every year after doing the long haul in particular, I'm like, do I want to run an ultra marathon? It's not, do I want to run a marathon or even a half marathon? It's like, should I run 100 miles?
Yes.
And I think the answer for me is maybe just stick with the volunteering for now. But if an experience can motivate me and inspire me that much to where I think it's a good idea for someone who's never run more than a 10K to run 100 miles, there's got to be something to it. There's got to be some magic in that, because it is a feeling unlike no other to watch people that you have gotten to know and care about cross that finish line, achieve their goals. That I would not change it for the world. I'll go back every year, and I'm trying to make it to more races this year, because it's just the best experience.
What I've learned from volunteering, as well as I think just cultural running in general, is the only limit that people have is the limit they put on themselves, that they think whatever their life is. And when you see the wide variety of this group that came through the aid station, the one thing that they had in common is that they knew they could do it. They had that mental strength to know to keep going, and it definitely makes you realize that you really can do anything that you think you can do.
I think for me, I just I mentioned, I keep going back to it. I've run a lot of races, thousands of volunteers through the years that have helped me get through those races. The chance to give back, if you haven't volunteered at an aid station or worked in some capacity in a race where you get to experience the other side of the table, it's worth doing at least just one. Every bit of supporting crossing the finish line yourself.
Yeah, that's how I feel too, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Joe, you're a full-on race director. Take it to the nth degree. So you get the satisfaction of handing out the medals and saying, I helped facilitate these 30, 50, 200 people crossing the finish line of an ultra marathon, and the mental, emotional, and physical, all of the above boost that gives that person going forward in life. You help make that happen.
Yeah, it's always a strange feeling when someone says, yeah, I'm tapering for your race, I can't wait. I'm just thinking, holy cow, wow.
My race? Are you sure? Mine?
But yeah, exactly. You know, even from when I do aid stations at a lot of Andy's races, it's like a huge recharge of energy just watching people come through and actually hit that finish.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure.
Well, you know, Joe, we shouldn't wrap up without saying, you know, with the new venue next year, we're going to have one more aid station. So people are going to have the benefit of the Thompson's aid station. We haven't talked that much about the Thompson's here, but they stand.
They are amazing. They are legends in the world of volunteering.
Yeah, the Thompson's, you know, they're a huge reason why I got so head over heels for the Florida ultra scene. You know, when I volunteered for my first Andy race, you know, I met you, Barrett, I met Andy, and yeah, I met the Thompson's. And I swear, I looked forward to seeing them at every single race. You know, they were such a huge influence for me and the love I have for this sport. And you know what? I don't know if you could ever add up all the hours they've spent volunteering, because I'm talking probably like, what, tens of thousands.
Yep. And then the three of us will have a second aid station elsewhere on the course. So we're gonna double the fun for everyone next year.
Ooh.
It might be the two of us if my father gets his way. He's trying to get Barrett over here to run this time, but we'll see.
Yeah. I'm waffling.
We'll see if that peer pressure kicks in.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're going to need someone to hang all those lights. So if any, yeah, like hanging lights in trees, we're going to need that spot filled for sure.
Well, hey, y'all, this was awesome.
Thanks for doing this.
This was awesome. Thank you, Joe.
Yes, thank you. It was really fun to relive.
All right, I'm going to go get myself a beer, join the rest of the camp. Thanks for putting up with my recording from a tent.
You sounded great, Alan.
Oh, you guys did too. Sorry I talked so much.
No, you were perfect.
Love it.
Well, I love you all. I'm going to sign off.
Love you.
Have fun.
All right, bye, guys.
Bye.
Yep, see ya. And there we have it, from the stories from the Long Haul 100, stories from the aid station. What an awesome dive into the outlook, the perspective of the aid station volunteers. You know, the aid station volunteers, they are what they are, volunteers. It's such a blessing to have so many people willing just to either reach out, help out, do the big things, the small things that really just keep a race going. Even from the race directing outlook, to me as the runner, just to have so many people willing to come out and give their time, give back, and to get those individuals to the finish line, it's truly amazing. And honestly, that's why, for me, I love volunteering. I love coming out to aid stations. It's such a recharge of my own energy. And I think everyone should just give it a try sometime. You know, you learn so much. You get a lot of knowledge of what people go through at races. And it's just a great way to give back. And honestly, it's a lot of fun. It's really just a lot of fun. So hey, you know, with that, until next time, happy trails.